Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. This week, the Center for Public Integrity released the results of a major 50-state assessment of how well state governments are upholding the public trust. It's called the State Integrity Investigation, and as it happens, I was the one who wrote the report for New Mexico. I also did that in the report that came out in 2012. You might have seen this news in the papers this week. We got a grade of D- on our report card. The report asked about 250 specific things in our state. Things like, does the public have good access to public records? When you ask for something, do you get it? And if you don't get it, what happens? Does our state do a good job of overseeing money in politics? Do people obey the rules or do they get around them? Do our state lawmakers recuse themselves when they have a conflict of interest? Do we ask lobbyists to tell us exactly how they're spending money? And the answer to most of those questions here in New Mexico is no, or not very well. We got Fs in all those areas. So how bad is it? And how do we fix it? That's what we're going to talk about today. With me is Inez Russell Gomez, who is the opinion page editor at the Santa Fe New Mexican. Welcome to the show, Inez.
Hi, good morning.
We are so glad to have you here. And also we have Nicholas Kuznets, who was the project manager who oversaw all the work being done in these 50 states. He joins us this morning from New York. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
Later in this hour, we're going to talk more about corruption with the publisher of the Las Vegas Optic, Martin Salazar, and we'll hear about one state that is doing things right. Meanwhile, Nick, this project, I know, took a really long time, and it was probably very expensive for you guys to produce. Why did you invest so much time and effort and money in this thing? What's the point?
Well, yes, it was expensive. It did take a long time. It was a ton of work, as you know. You know, state government is really hugely important, and to a degree that a lot of people, I think, don't necessarily always realize. I mean, particularly with gridlock in Washington, a majority of Americans now turn to state and local government for solutions to policy problems. And at the same time, newspapers around the country have been forced to cut staff and reduce their coverage of state houses. So there are fewer eyes, you know, looking, prying into what is going on in state government. So it's a hugely important area for examination. And as the results show, you know, there are a lot of questions that need to be asked.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Nick. You know, we are responsible as the public and the media for keeping our eyes on people in government and trying to hold them accountable. The founding fathers put this, you know, three-part system in place to have checks and balances, and they gave the press special privileges because they thought that role was so important. But there are fewer of us. Inez, you've been in the newspaper business in New Mexico and other places for several years, we'll say, and very well experienced, young but deeply experienced. How has this changed here in New Mexico since you've been around? Are there really fewer people looking at what's going on?
Definitely. Of course, there used to be a newspaper called the Albuquerque Tribune, which had a state house bureau. So that's gone completely. The Journal seems to have less of a presence than it once did. AP had Barry Massey, who then went off to, I think he works for the courts division now. We're lucky at the Santa Fe New Mexican that our editor, Ray Rivera, has made it a priority that we're going to keep covering the state house. So we still have Steve Terrell full time. And then during the session, Milan Simonich comes on, and he's been covering the legislature for quite a while. And then all of our beat reporters that, let's say, education or environment, they come on. So we spend a lot of time and effort covering state government and politics.
It is important, that, and there's no question there are fewer people out there, so it's more work for those who are left. Nick, what are some of the biggest trends that you saw in the states across the country? What popped up and said, wow, this is a problem everywhere?
Well, the biggest problem everywhere, I would say, is came in our public access to information category, which is asking about open records laws, open meetings laws. And there we saw 44 states get failing grades. And that was largely a result of, you know, with few exceptions, these open record laws have now become laced with exemptions. And more than that, There's no entities, no agencies, for the most part, that are tasked with overseeing the law. So when a citizen or a reporter makes a request, if that request is rejected or delayed, they, in most states, they have no one to turn to try and, you know, have that resolved.
That's largely the case here. Even though folks can complain to the Attorney General's office, most people don't know that they can do that. And the result, it takes a really long time. Were there any states that did a good job at that?
Well, one state that jumps out is Iowa, and they actually scored poorly in the category in 2012. But subsequent to that, they created a new body, a public records board, essentially, that's tasked with mediating disputes. I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it's our reporter there cited an example of when it was able to step in and help out citizens. And so that's one of a handful of states that have this kind of entity and show how it can help resolve these disputes.
That is cool. And we're going to talk some more about these things later in the hour when we hear from Austin Baird, the reporter in Alaska, who wrote about the state that got the highest grade. Before we talk to him, Nick, let me ask you this. Only three states scored higher than a D+. Now, I teach here at UNM, and if I give a test and the highest grade is a D, then I think to myself, I wrote a test that was too hard. So I curve it, and I give the top score an A. Why didn't you curve this thing? Why does everybody get bad grades?
Well, when we put this together with our partners, Global Integrity, they're a nonprofit group in D.C. that promotes accountability and transparency in government. We talked to more than 100 different experts around the country, academics, advocates, people in government, reporters, to come up with these key indicators. You know, those were the 250 questions you referred to earlier. And so these are each sort of a best practice, you know, and we didn't want to look at sort of, okay, well, what are people doing? We wanted to see what are, you know, the best practices to have strong ethics laws, strong open records laws. And we put together this list, and you know, the results are sort of speak for themselves. I mean, we certainly weren't going to curve it.
So 11 states totally bombed. They got Fs. They stayed up all night partying, and they did not study for this test. Does that mean that they just have no integrity or they're totally corrupt? What does it mean if you fail this thing or you got really close, like New Mexico?
Well, it's an important point, is that this is not a measure of corruption. You know, we are not saying that Michigan, which was last, is the most corrupt state, or that Alaska, that you're going to talk about soon, you know, is the least corrupt. We're just looking at the systems that states have in place. And you'll see one trend is a lot of Western states with a history and tradition of small government often don't tend to have these measures in place. Also, you have part-time legislatures. I mean, you know that in New Mexico. And, you know, there's sort of a belief in small government. That said, you know, it's important for citizens to be able to gain information about what's going on in their government, to learn about conflicts of interest that their legislators may have. And without these systems, you know, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to do that.
And as this story ran on the front page of your paper, the Santa Fe New Mexican, what was your reaction when you saw this big graphic and saw that your state got a D- in this? What did you take away from that right away?
I took away that for whatever reason, citizens don't understand the connection between openness and how that affects them in their daily lives, because I think if people voted on this issue, it would make a difference. And obviously, even though we complain about corruption or we complain about lack of transparency in government, we as citizens aren't making a difference by electing officials who will actually change those things. I just don't think it's that big of an issue, even though it should be.
Yeah, you know. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, you go.
I was saying last night I talked to my students about this, my journalism students, and they said, yeah, we should get rid of these people. And I said, or try to persuade the ones you have to do things that are better. You know, it's not about necessarily just cleaning house, but putting pressure on people you maybe do like who are already in office to do these things. Nick, although your partners at Global Integrity have been doing this kind of research on countries all over the world for many years now, this is only the second one that we've done here. The last one came out in 2012, which I worked on. I think this one is better. But what was the impact of that first report nationwide? You mentioned in Iowa that they created a board to look when people to mediate disputes that happen when people don't get their public records. Were there any other major impacts that came out of the 2012 report? Did people change stuff?
Yeah, there were a number of examples of that. There were reform measures introduced in 12 states, and in more than half of those, they actually passed something. You know, Iowa is a good example. The governor actually cited the project when he was signing the bill. But in Rhode Island, the governor enacted some reforms. There was a gift cap passed in Georgia, for example. So there were reforms.
And are you hoping to see more this time?
Absolutely.
Or what do you hope? I mean, you probably don't have specific solutions that you're hoping for, but what's the best case scenario that comes out of all, you know, newspapers in all 50 states probably ran stories this week saying your state is pretty bad at this thing. What is the best case scenario now?
Well, you know, we're a journalism organization. We're journalists, and so we're not going to be out there advocating policy solutions. I mean, our job is to bring these issues to light, to make sure the public has access to it and that people in government, too, have access to it. So we certainly want people to learn about these issues and to dive into the report. I mean, you know, you, Gwyneth, in New Mexico and 49 of your counterparts did a ton of work, and all of that is available to people. You know, they can look on the website, click on each of those 250 questions and find explanations for the scoring and sources. So we certainly want this to enter public discussion.
Nick, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. And if listeners want to see how other states did or dig into the data, they can see the whole project at publicintegrity.org. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, what do you think? What does it mean to you that New Mexico scored so badly on this thing? As Nick just mentioned, it doesn't mean automatically that our state is corrupt. It means that our systems that protect against corruption might be weak. How can we strengthen them? Let us know. Call 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can send your comment or question in an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Inez, you're a native New Mexican and you've been a reporter a long time. What were some of the, did anything in this report really surprise you, or did you read this and go like, I know, tell me about it?
No, it's not surprising. Anyone who's ever made a public records request or gotten kicked out of a meeting that's supposed to be public has experienced this. And I think because we have so many small governments, you know, you think about the county boards or the, you know, water boards in a little town or the Acequia commissions or all of those things, it's really hard to get information. I used to joke when I went to graduate school in Washington, D.C., and people would get news releases and statements, they ought to go to Rio Riba and try to get the sheriff to comment in person on anything and actually get reporting, you know, out there. It's just how we do it. And there's no, I think that the key that your report pointed out is there's no punishment.
Yeah,
so
that's
true. If you
can
get away with it, why not, you know?
Yeah, but it is hard because, you know, I know from my experience in trying to help people get these records at the Foundation for Open Government that when you talk to some of these agencies, these parts of government, and you say, why didn't you give them this stuff? A lot of times it's just misunderstanding. The law is a little bit counterintuitive. The law says all of these records should be open, and people naturally feel that they're file folders and their documents and their reports that they create at work should be sort of private, but they're not because they're created for the government. So there's this tension, I know, at the Attorney General's office here between trying to make sure everybody understands how this works and trying to, you know, push them to actually do it. It's a tough combination.
And it is. And to be fair to government workers, they're really busy. So when you think about efficiency in governments, nobody says, you know, have three people just to open up records for the public is a great way to spend money, even though it really is because it ensures that people know what's happening in their government. And I think as bureaucrats get busier and busier and they're overworked and they're stressed, the last thing they want to do is deal with a reporter when they can be dealing with something their boss wants.
Folks, in a minute, we're going to hear more about corruption in state government from Martin Salazar, who's the publisher of the Las Vegas Optic. Last month, Salazar broke the story of a public education department official who faked the credentials he used to get a job as the school superintendent in Mora. He did this while he was the head of the department at the public education department that makes sure teachers and administrators have the right qualifications for the job. What do you think, guys? Have we made strides in recent years, or are things as bad as they ever were? Is state government more corrupt than it used to be, or are things getting better? Call in and let us know what you think. 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. Toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or find us on Twitter, KUNM News. We'll be right back.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for holiday parties and family gatherings. EdibleArrangements.com. Edible Arrangements supports KUNM.
Support comes from UNM Theater and Dance, presenting The Seagull, an Anton Chekhov masterpiece filled with passion, loss, jealousy, and intrigue. Now through November 15th in Rohde Theater. Details at theater.unm.edu.
Ever wanted to be one of the judges at an Iron Chef-style cooking competition? Then join us at November's Salud y Sabor event. There'll be activities for kids, food tastings, and three local chefs will compete before a panel of local judges to help raise awareness about hunger and healthy eating. It's a collaboration between KUNM, the Street Food Institute, the Agricultura Network, and the National Hispanic Cultural Center. Join us there Thursday evening, November 19th at 5:30. Complete details at KUNM.org.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and we're talking about state government and its integrity or lack thereof. This week, the Center for Public Integrity in Washington released report cards looking at how accountable state governments are to the people. And New Mexico got a D-. I know, because I wrote the report. With me today is Inez Russell Gomez, the opinion page editor at the Santa Fe New Mexican, and joining us now is Martin Salazar of the Las Vegas Optic. Welcome to the show, Martin.
Hi, Gwyneth.
Martin, I compiled this report after talking to dozens of experts, advocates, lobbyists, academics, public officials, state lawmakers, and then my editors crunched all this data and they came up with these letter grades. I only found them out a little bit before everybody else. And as you may have noticed when you got this information from the center, nobody did very well. Only a few states did better than a D. So from up there in Las Vegas, does this seem accurate to you that New Mexico should score a D-?
I think it does. There are serious problems with how public officials, how they go about responding to records requests and, how they handle open meetings. We had a city over here in Las Vegas, a city council that for a long time would just not allow people to speak if they were going to be critical of employees, and that's just unacceptable. It's an infringement of the First Amendment, and it kind of shows the mentality of many government officials, I feel.
That's a really good point. Let's take a call quickly from Peter in Albuquerque. Peter, welcome to the show.
Right, thank you. I want to tell you that my occupation is I work on behalf of people who are poor and people with disabilities trying to influence public policy. And having grown up in Detroit, I just want to make this point that big corporations and other big organizations, not just the government, have problems with people taking advantage of their positions of power. They're wasteful and corrupt and engage in nepotism. So I just don't want anybody to think that it's only government that we need to keep an eye on. But here's the point that I would like to share and ask people to give feedback about. I use the Inspection of Public Records Act very often to obtain government information and then to show up at their meetings and to participate in the process of decision-making. And there's a group in existence in New Mexico called the Foundation on Open Government that helps people like me and all citizens get access to information and participate in the public process. So I just want your listeners to know, and I'd be interested in hearing your commenters get feedback about how the Foundation on Open Government is a tool available to us and how we might, all of us, participate more actively if we choose to use the Inspection of Public Records Act to just write a letter or an email and say, I'm invoking the Inspection of Public Records Act, give me the public information I want, and then to use that to influence policy. I think that we have an underutilized tool available to us.
Thank you for that, Peter. And I know that the folks on the phone right now are very familiar with the Foundation for Open Government. And I'm glad you brought it up because I used to be the executive director there, so I'm a big fan. It is a nonprofit. They are here to help you. You can find them online. Look for New Mexico Foundation for Open Government. Martine, tell us about this Mora school superintendent. As you know, this is an example of a thing like the resignation of the Secretary of State, Diana Duran, that happened after my report was finished. So that's not even included in our D minus here. Tell us about what this superintendent did.
His name is Charles Trujillo, and he was the superintendent of the Morris School District. He was hired in May, took over on July 1st, and about 2 years before taking that job, he served as the chief of the New Mexico licensure of the New Mexico Public Education Department's licensure bureau, essentially the state entity that licenses all teachers and all school administrators. And I don't know if your listeners are aware, but all school administrators must hold a license. It's you know a state law, and that's done to make sure that they're qualified to hold these important positions. Well, Mr. Trujillo faked a transcript claiming a master's degree that he never earned, and then he embellished his work experience to acquire a state administrative license and three other top licenses from the Public Education Department. He then left PED and went to work as an assistant superintendent in Pecos, earning an $80,000 salary. And then after that, he moved on to the Morris School District, where his uncle is the chairman of the school board, and was hired for the $100,000 a year job. And it was through public records that we were able to piece together that he had faked his credentials in order to obtain this license, and
Martine,
that he frankly was not qualified for the job he was holding.
Thank you so much for making that connection. Without good access to the records of government, it makes it so hard for us to uncover when things go wrong. I want to ask you about this guy. Does this example say something about state government in general, or is he just an outlier? Is this just one clever but damaged human being who wanted to get ahead and broke the rules to do it?
Gwyneth, I wish I could say that this was an isolated case. We are continuing to look at licenses that have been handed out, and we have found several that are at best questionable. And so this appears to be a systemic problem within the State Public Education Department's Licensure Bureau. And in fact, we've had a couple of current and former employees who worked in the Licensing Bureau who basically say they raise concerns about Charles Trujillo, they raise concerns about other licenses, and, you know, frankly, the higher-ups at the Public Education Department did nothing to address their concerns.
Inez, we've got this guy who took advantage of his office up at the Public Education Department and apparently got other people to falsify records to help him. The Secretary of State just pleaded guilty to using her campaign funds to gamble at casinos. And Senator Phil Griego resigned after it appears he voted to sell a piece of state land and then benefited on the commission from selling that himself. Now the FBI is investigating the governor's fundraising practices. What is wrong with us?
I think that people are just naturally greedy, and they seek to profit, and it's just the story of human condition. And in New Mexico, when you think about how long we've been around, at least our corruption is not leading to a war, as happened in the Lincoln County Wars. Albert Fall was a cabinet secretary, but a former New Mexico senator, and he ended up causing the Teapot Dome scandal. So I don't know if it's any worse than it's ever been, but it's continuing. And I think as long as there's only one place to profit, which in New Mexico happens to be government, people will keep doing these things. And I think what Martine's story was so important is that there was no system in PED to make sure that what the guy was claiming was true. So you have to have enforcement, and you have to have people to check, and you have to have systems in place that will catch the crooks.
Yeah, I think that's an important takeaway from each of these situations. You know, now I hope the public education department is asking itself, whoa, how can we prevent this from happening again? What do we have to do to make sure we are checking this? And I think the Secretary of State's example highlighted to a lot of us, whoa, we need to look more closely at this campaign finance data and see if there's anything we can do to double check it, cross-reference it. And I think the Phil Griego example has got us all thinking more about when our state lawmakers need to say, hey, I have a conflict of interest, how we're going to ask them to do that and how we're going to hold them accountable when they don't. We've got Patrick on the phone right now in Santa Fe. Good morning, Patrick.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. First, I didn't read the article in total. I just saw the headlines, and you know, I kind of nodded my head and thought, "Yeah, so what? This is news." But just because I've been living in New Mexico for 20 years, and I've of course been saddened by the amount of political corruption that I see, and I really very much appreciate the Open Government Act that New Mexico has. But I want to place this report card in context, and I don't know the context. So my question is this. In your research, did you find a relationship between low marks in government and rurality and poverty? And the reason I mention that is because I've been listening to this conversation. You know, there's been a lot of obviously very interesting conversations about our responsibility as citizens. But I can tell you firsthand that it's very difficult to make a living in New Mexico. And there's something about people being poor and just struggling that prohibits us from paying attention to these sort of, at the risk of sounding perhaps effete or anything else, to these higher issues. I mean, most people are just trying to get by. There's an endemic drug problem in New Mexico. We're very poor. And I'm wondering if there's any relationship between the fact that the more poor a state is, basically, the less people really care about anything else other than getting by.
Patrick, and thank you for that point. You know, I think if anybody, I didn't look at this, and I don't know the answer to this question, but if you go to the Center for Public Integrity's website, you can look at all 50 states, and I think it would be interesting to crunch the data of how those states scored and which are more poor. But I think perhaps one of the more important, I mean, if we look at fewer eyeballs from the press on what is going on, fewer flashlights shining into these dark corners, we also have fewer people going to public meetings, showing up the legislature, writing their lawmakers, asking questions. And, you know, that's on us. That's on people who, you know, are not taking the initiative. And I think poverty is a part of it, although, you know, also Netflix, maybe your cell phones. I think that, honestly, that could be part of it. Martine, was there anything that occurred to you from this report that you said, huh, this is really interesting because I have also seen this problem and there should be a change here? Are we going to see some editorials in your paper about change?
I think so. And I think the takeaway for me is just this enforcement gap that your report highlights and how, you know, we have some of the laws on our books, a lot of the laws on our books are good ones. It's just a matter of enforcement and really making sure that our attorney general, our state auditor, and every other oversight agency is exercising its role and fulfilling its role in serving as a check to our system, because if we don't have that oversight, then, you know, bad things are going to happen.
That is a really good point. On the phone in Albuquerque, we have Douglas in Albuquerque. Douglas, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a few questions and comments. I guess, number one, regarding Freedom of Information Act requests, how does one get those enforced? Because I know some people who've made some, and they've had, I think, the mayor himself tell them they're not going to get fulfilled. He's commanding people to not, telling people under him not to, just to basically ignore them.
Okay, Douglas, that's a good question. We can answer it. So if those records are legally required to be turned over, there are a few exceptions in our law. And if you put in a request in writing and you ask for those records, there are directions on how to do this, by the way, on the Attorney General's website and on the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government's website. There's some sample letters there you can use to write in and ask for public records. If they don't give them, first, complain to the people you asked for them. Secondly, call the Foundation for Open Government and ask for their advice. Third, if that's not working, you can file an official complaint with the Attorney General's office, and then tell the people you asked for the records that you sent that complaint to the Attorney General's office, and often that gives them a little kick in the pants. So those are the steps that I would take if you put in a request for public records. That's what I would do.
Okay. And then how does one, who would one talk to if one knows of public resources being used for personal use? Because I know people who, like, live near former Senate Minority Leader, and he's got so much.
Well, let's take this as a general example.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that there is a state government employee who is using public resources for personal purposes, the state auditor has a waste, fraud, and abuse hotline. And you can find that phone number on the auditor's website, and you can call in and leave a tip, and they follow up there. Douglas, thank you for bringing up those two questions, because I think that's probably helpful for some other folks who are listening at home. So we've been talking about how there's not enough work being done by the media, and that's on us. I'll take that. There's not enough members of the public demanding transparency and information and accountability from state government. Okay, that's true. But we have weak systems in place. Our laws are not quite as good as they should be, especially when it comes down to enforcing them. We don't have enough teeth in the law to be effective watchdogs of state government. Inez and Martine, is there anything that you think this report doesn't address, things that it misses? What did I miss here?
It's not that I think that anything was missed necessarily. I think that more focus on what works in other places is always good, because we tend to think of ourselves as isolated and unique, and really most places are more similar than we know. So I remember the first time I ever was covering a school story in Florida. I was an editor at a paper there, and they came back with the name of a kid who'd been suspended. And I was like, well, we can't run that name. We don't get that. And they said, yes, you do, because in Florida, names were public. So lots of things that we think we can't get to here, you can in other places. And I think the more we share that these things should be open, and they are open, and the more we share how other places punish, like if someone who withheld records actually was fined a bunch, they probably would stop withholding records.
That's a good point.
So we, you know.
Martine?
I agree with Inez. I love the idea of having a best practices type of thing out there, so that we can look to, you know, what other states are doing that's working. I think that's a very good idea.
Well, you are in luck, because that's what we're going to talk about next. Martine, thank you so much for talking to us a little bit about what's been happening in Las Vegas and your view from Northern New Mexico. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
In the next few minutes, we are going to hear from the reporter who wrote the report on Alaska. And Alaska got the highest grade in this 50-state report card. What do you think New Mexico should do to make sure our government does better the next time a report like this comes out? How can we better represent the honesty, the hard work, and the integrity of New Mexicans? because we know that's true. What positive changes do you recommend? We'll hear more in a minute. Call in now. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. You can tweet at KUNM News or find us on Facebook. We'll be right back. Join me for the Well Woman Show on Friday at 8 a.m. on KUNM 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi, and I'll be interviewing women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs and giving advice that supports you to reveal the awesome woman you really are. Tune in to the Well Woman Show this Friday at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
This week in This American Life. So somebody gives you a time machine. What would you do with it?
Yeah, warn people of disasters, I guess.
I'm going to go back and, I'm going to kill Hitler.
Or kill Hitler when he's a baby, or kill his mother or something.
So some people want to change history. Others are more selfish.
Probably wouldn't have asked my ex-wife out that first time.
There are some people that I wish I could have punched.
This week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Gwyneth Dolan, and I'm here with Inez Russell Gomez, the opinion page editor at the Santa Fe New Mexican. Joining us by phone now in Anchorage is Austin Baird, a reporter for KTUU-TV, who did the investigation of Alaska's accountability. Welcome to the show, Austin.
Happy to join you. Happy to join you.
Austin, Alaska only got a C on this report card of accountability, transparency, and ethics in state government, but still, that was the top grade in the class. Is this something Alaskans should be proud of, or does this feel like a dubious honor to you?
I would say it's closer to a dubious honor, and kind of the first thing I would say is overall, Alaska certainly is not a shining example of ethics and openness in government. We do have some pretty poor access to information laws and also some interesting conflict of interest rules that allow part-time lawmakers, for example, who work for ConocoPhillips outside of the legislative session to lead oil tax reform and are actually required to vote. So that's definitely a lot of areas where the state could do better. But we did kind of have the benefit of a late start with a constitutional convention that was in 1955, 1956. Some delegates are still alive, and we definitely I had kind of instilled at the beginning just a big goal of distancing money from politics, and that was one of the unifying themes of the Constitutional Convention, where you could ask one of the most conservative members and one of the more progressive members of the convention, and they would certainly have agreed that distancing money from politics was a big goal, and that was kind of instilled in the process all the way back to the beginning.
Austin, thank you for bringing up a good point about your part-time legislature up there in Alaska, because we have the same thing here. And we also are trying to grapple with the fact that these people have to have real jobs or be retired from real jobs, and they have a lot of connections in the community. And it is hard to prevent conflicts of interest from happening, and we don't have a good system for doing it. You said in Alaska they are not only discouraged from recusing themselves, which we have seen here, but they're forced to vote?
Absolutely. So it's a very long-standing debate, and all the way back to the 1970s and 1980s. The thinking goes from people who enacted the current legislative rules is that the state is small enough that there are small enough, of course, not geographically, but population-wise, that there are going to be conflicts of interest, and that the best way is to force people to vote on everything so that they can't walk away from tough votes. That was a big problem, according to former House Speaker Mike Bradner, when there were some key issues related to the development of the Trans-Alaska pipeline system. People didn't want to take a stance, so they would walk out, and you would have decisions being made with in the Senate, the 20-member Senate. There would be like 4-3 votes making decisions, And so this was how they got in the other direction, but there's still plenty of controversy about it.
That's a really good point, because we also are big geographically, but small in terms of our population, and we have some of these same problems. It's interesting to think of what would happen if more people here, if people here did start recusing themselves very regularly. Alaska scored well for the way it holds judges accountable. And New Mexico also does a pretty good job of that. We actually scored pretty well. We've got what's called the Judicial Standards Commission, and it investigates complaints about state-level judges. It hands out some penalties. It sends judges to training. And if there are real serious mistakes, it asks them to resign or retire. Inez, the JSC is pretty well respected, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it acts fastly and quickly. And the only problem from a journalist standpoint or the public standpoint is everything's generally secret. So you only hear the conclusions, not the deliberations.
Yeah, and that is true of systems in some other states, too. Our problem in New Mexico is we don't have anything like the Judicial Standards Commission for the legislature or the governor and the rest of the executive branch. Alaska got some of the best grades in the country for ethics. Austin, how does Alaska deal with a complaint that, say a member of your legislature did something unethical? What would happen? Who would look at that?
Well, the first level of scrutiny would come from the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, and kind of similar to the process that was just being described. Everything is kept secretive until a decision is reached. But there are pretty strict ethics rules, and that's kind of in the wake of 2006, a very big corruption scandal that led to state lawmakers being imprisoned, and investigation of former U.S. Senator Ted Stevens. And after that, when oil companies were literally giving envelopes full of cash to legislators in exchange for votes. There have been much closer, much stricter ethical rules enacted, and the Legislative Ethics Committee, and then there's also the Attorney General could step in and take a look, and that has happened a couple times.
You're making us feel a little bit better, Austin, and I'm liking it. Thank you for that. Thank you for telling us things got really bad before they got better. Let's hear from Mike in Albuquerque, who's on the phone with us now. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for having the show. Listen, this is, unfortunately, I do a lot of politics, and full disclosure, I'm an active member of the Democratic Party and stuff like that, but there's a lot more here than often meets the eye. Now, you keep on talking about the auditor's office, Tim Keller, and you keep on, that's the Keller. Well, I've talked to Tim Keller. I've talked to his predecessor, who is now the Attorney General, about this whole issue. And, hopefully I'm not telling a tale out of school here, but the reality is the state legislature does not fund the auditor's office at a sustainable level. They don't want it funded, and this is Democrat and Republicans.
Thank you for that.
They do not want that office funded. They're probably about a third to a fourth of what a number of auditors that they should have. And so you can't expect them to do stuff that they have no resources to do.
Mike, if you look at the report, we actually scored very well in internal auditing. And our system, where the state auditor's office actually contracts almost all of its audits to private public accountants, actually seems to work pretty decently. I think if you look at the report, you'll see that where we scored very badly is at the Secretary of State's office, which is in charge of a huge shopping cart full of stuff, including campaign finance oversight and ethics. And that office, I think you could argue, probably could do with more funding. But funding is always the issue that we're talking about here. And the question is, can we just throw money at something, or can we just change the rules to try to do something more efficiently? Austin, lobbyists are required to give a lot more information in Alaska. According to your report, lobbyists and their employers file quarterly statements detailing how much money they spent, who they spent it on, and how much money they earned. Do they complain about this? Do lobbyists tell you, oh, this is such a terrible burden?
No, really, the overwhelming, if you ask a lobbyist for a large oil company or a nonprofit or anything, it's kind of just the law of the land, and it's just part of what they have to do. And I've not heard any complaints from people saying it's too much or anything along those lines. It's just part of what you have to do.
Well, we saw some state lawmakers try to require more disclosure from lobbyists in New Mexico during our last legislative session, and there were great cries that this would have been too much work. So it's interesting to hear that in Alaska, this is kind of a non-issue. In New Mexico, candidates' campaign finance reports, the public officials' financial disclosure forms, and those spending reports from lobbyists all go, as I mentioned a minute ago, to the Secretary of State's office. But only the campaign finance reports, and only about 10% of those, are required to be audited. So the rest of this information goes to the Secretary of State's office and straight into a folder. You know, it goes there, and as long as it's there on time, nobody really looks at it. But that's not the way it works in Alaska. You have a separate group that checks this stuff. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's called the Alaska Public Offices Commission, and it's composed of a public member, a Democrat, a Libertarian, and two Republicans. That's the board, but there's also a professional staff of auditors and people who are more or less insulated from politics, and they audit nearly every single disclosure form that comes in from legislators, legislative financial disclosure forms, and also the information that's coming in from lobbyists.
Inez, did your brain just explode?
I can't imagine people actually checking things. I think one of the best things we could do without spending any more money is make things more simple. Because if people can't understand the rules, they're going to break the rules even if they don't mean to. And if I'm a reporter and I'm checking someone's reports and it's so complicated that I can't connect the dots. So I think whether cynically or accidentally, they've made some of the campaign disclosure laws so complicated that no one can figure them out. The Secretary of State often doesn't know the rules. So I think the first thing we could do is make things easy to understand, and then people can file them, and then we can catch them if they're doing it wrong.
That's a good point. Inez, if we had something like what Alaska has done, a public offices commission that is got, you know, a mixture of political folks on there, so it's not partisan, and it's got a professional staff who actually audits campaign finance reports and lobbyist reports and all this stuff, would things be different here? What would be different?
I think what would be different is the knowledge that you could get caught. And I think, you know, maybe the death penalty is not a deterrent, but I think getting banned from lobbying and winning stuff for your client or going to jail or getting a big fine, those are a deterrent for people in public life. You know, a senator who's a crook getting caught and actually stripped of his pension and kicked out, that's a deterrent.
Yeah.
So I think if we make it easier to catch people, they're going to do less to be caught for.
Right. I mean, I think we all know of our past selves, our teenage selves, or the younger people in our lives. They will take what they can get, and they will push it as far as they can go. But if they know that the punishment is strict, I'm thinking specifically of my own experience here, they won't do so much. Let's hear from John in Albuquerque. He's on the phone with us. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I wanted to comment on your comment that the media and the people need to get more involved. And I think you're 100% correct. However, the entities that we get involved with, I think, throw up a lot of roadblocks. The county commission meets at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a work day. When people go, they often change the agenda. So if you were first on the list, then they put you to last. That happened when we were doing the Pajarito dump thing during Santa Elena. They were just delay after delay, and, you know, people are taking time off from work, and, you know, so it makes it difficult to get involved when they pull tactics like that.
You know, that's true, but I think one of the things that we have seen happening here in New Mexico over the past few years is the increasing amount of public interaction the public can do by, for example, watching some of these public meetings at the legislature here in the city of Albuquerque and some other cities on TV, on public access television, or online, because they're webcasting that stuff. Inez?
I was just going to say, we had a series of meetings over the summer where the Santa Fe City Council kept making really important decisions after midnight or around midnight, and the public got so irate in Santa Fe with letters to the editor and calling their councilors and the mayor that they've actually switched how they do their meetings to make more of an effort to do the business in the early evening hours when people are actually there and don't have to wait 5 hours. So I think that if people become outraged and say, you can't do your business like this, there's a chance that the public bodies who do want to get reelected will change how they practice.
I think the public sometimes underestimates or overestimates exactly how much they have to do to have an impact. You know, a couple of years ago, I wrote a story about the Albuquerque area water system and their effort to regulate the amount of fluoride that was in the water. And people filled that city council chamber for the water utilities meetings and forced the utility to not do anything because they couldn't, they didn't want them to change that amount of fluoride. And that was like two meetings. It was maybe 50 people. It really doesn't take that much as people think it may, to influence public officials. If enough people go up to the roundhouse or go to their city council or their county commission chambers, if you do make your wishes known, they notice.
Yeah, Austin, no, they do. And just call them and tweet and email. All those things work. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, good. I thought you went away.
Sorry. You know, it is true that they hear you. They don't always agree, you know, but making a stink makes a difference. And we saw that here in Albuquerque, where the public complained and complained and protested until things changed. Austin, I want to thank you so much for talking to us from Alaska and letting us know what your state has done to score so much better than we did. It is good to know that things aren't quite perfect up there, but in response to scandals and change, Alaska made things different and made them better. Thank you so much for telling us about that.
Thank you for having me.
And Inez, thank you for giving us your wisdom and your perspective from Santa Fe and from your long experience watching state government in its movements. We really appreciate your help.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thank you to my guests, Inez Russell Gomez of the Santa Fe New Mexican, Austin Baird of KTUU-TV in Anchorage. Thanks also to Martin Salazar of the Las Vegas Optic and Nicholas Kuznets with the Center for Public Integrity. There is a podcast of the KUNM Call-In Show. You can find it on iTunes or you can look on the KUNM.org website. We will post the audio there. You can also find a link to the Center for Public Integrity and all of these reports we've been talking about today. You can listen to previous shows there at KUNM.org. We've talked about a lot of these issues on previous shows, so you can find more information. You can email comments about today's show to callinshow@KUNM.org. You can find us on Facebook and leave us some feedback there. Just look for KUNM Radio. You can tweet your thoughts to us. Find us at KUNM News. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today, Kaveh Movahed, screened your calls. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan.